All right. Now, the Mishnah continues, and it says, Ein ben kohen mishamish lekohen she'ovar el par yom kippurim v'asiris ha'efah. Here's a different case. Case is now that you had a kohen gadol, right? He was supposed to officiate. Something happened, and he could not officiate that day. So what happened? Of course, this was particularly important as far as Yom Kippur is concerned. Why? Because other days in the year, most of the service could be carried on by other Kohanim, not necessarily by the Kohen Gadol. Except if the Kohen Gadol felt that he wants to do it, then in that case he had first pick. You understand? But apart from that, I mean, if the Kohen Gadol wanted to take it easy, so he could permit, you know, other Kohanim to take care of the sacrifices and things like that. But then Yom Kippur, the entire service actually involves the Kohen Gadol. Okay? So, what happens if the Kohen Gadol was rendered inactive on that day? So in that case, you had to appoint another Kohen Gadol.
Right, someone
to take his place.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
But a substitute had not gone through that whole night in
the
preparation.
All right.
They always
so the
had
answer
one,
is,
yeah.
if
had
you
one.
Take a look
sorted.
At the text of Gemara Yuma, where they speak about the preparation, 7 days and so on and so forth, it says also that Maskinin Kohen Acher Tachto. And at the same time, they also prepare a second Kohen to serve in his place in case he happens to be. Right, a backup. Okay? Yeah. The Gemara says no, because they say that already is stretching it too far. Okay.
What was his question?
It's written, if you remember, that the Chiper Ba'ado Va'ad Beso. That the Kohen Gadol has to make atonement for himself and also for his household, Beso.
Right.
And the Gemara explains that Beso means Zu Ishto. In other words, his household means his wife as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because a man, a Kohen Gadol, cannot be a Kohen Gadol unless he's a married man. Okay?
Of course. Mm-hmm.
All right. So Greg's question is, since they have a substitute, do they have to prepare a wife for the substitute, or a wife even for the Kohen Gadol, in case she should happen to pass away.
Somebody would have to be married.
Have to be a married man. All right. So the answer is that they say this doesn't normally happen, so they don't have to.
They're not even thinking
about it. But that a Kohen Gadol may not be able to officiate, that is more of a possibility. Although we have a tradition that it rarely happened. But once in a while it did happen. Okay. All right. So at any rate, what it says over here is the difference between a Kohen who is serving, Mishamesh, to a Kohen who had been passed by, the difference is El Par Yom HaKippurim V'Asiris HaEifah, which means as follows. That if he is the acting Kohen, in other words, he's performing the service, and in that particular case, what does he have to do? He has to bring his own personal bull, as we said. Okay? And then we also have an obligation that the Kohen Gadol has to perform, and that is that every day he put a tenth of an ephah of flour into a special kind of a pan that we call a machlas, or machlat, okay? And he had to cook it over there or fry it, whatever it was, and this was an offering that he had to put on the altar. He had to burn it. Okay? So that was only a Kohen Gadol who did that. We call that chavit. Okay? So the point is then that what? If we had a substitute Kohen Gadol, then when Yom Kippur would come around again, could he perform it or not? If the original Kohen Gadol, who was incapacitated for the moment, then was able to return to his position. This is what we'll see in the Gemara. So he says, okay, Hola Inyan, Gemara, Hola Inyan Par Yom Kippur, Masiso Eifo, Zeveze Shovin. So the first implication is that as far as the performance of a Kohen who is Merube Begodim, in other words, a Kohen of the Second Temple period, as compared to Kohen HaMashiach, right? Their obligations are identical. That's the first thing that they discuss. In other words, we're going back to the beginning of the Mishnah to explain that first, where it dealt with the difference between, it says, you know, no difference between the Kohen Gadol, no matter whether he served in the First Temple or Second Temple. In each case, they were obligated to do what? They were each obligated to bring their own par, right, on Yom Kippur. Not the par of the Helam Dover, as we say, right? You know, the one where they made a mistake in the halacha, but we're talking about the par, the personal one that he has to, you know, his own, that he has to sacrifice for himself and his household, right? And when it comes to also the chavit and the tenth of an ephah, they each have the same obligation. So, the Gemara continues and says, Mas nisin deloke Rabbi Meir. Says this teaching in our Mishnah does not really follow an opinion expressed by whom? By Rabbi Meir. Remember, you can always have different opinions, okay? So Rabbi Meir had a different opinion. The E Rabbi Meir, because in the opinion of Rabbi Meir, it's Merubah Begodim maybe par Habal Kol Hamizbos. Dear Rabbi Meir, we find that the Kohen of the Second Temple, if he also cause the people to go astray through giving them the wrong interpretation, so he also has to bring the par helm dover, according to Rabbi Meir. But Chachomim Ovrim, but it's the sages who say what? Ain't no maybe. He does not bring. So now they want to analyze. What is it? Why does Rabbi Meir say that? He says, my time in the Rabbi Meir, what's the reason that Rabbi Meir says that even in the time of the Second Temple, the Kohen Gadol should also bring a par helm dover? He says, the Tanya, because we've learned Moshiach. Ein v'yela Moshiach, v'shem en ha-mishcha, v'rub v'godim v'nayin, tabin oma ha-moshiach. It's written in ha-kohen ha-moshiach. Now, this is based upon the fact that if we find a letter which is not necessary, it could be understood without it, then why does the Torah use it? The answer is, it uses it in order to teach us another teaching. Okay? In other words, if it simply said, Im Kohen Moshiach, okay? If it said, a priest who is anointed should make this mistake and so on, then he has to bring the par helm dover. Okay?
This is HaMashiach.
Right, but it's written Im HaKohen HaMashiach, right? So why does it say that? So according to Rabbi Meir, that means that that's why it says HaMashiach, which means that even the Kohen who is now serving in the Second Temple period, even though he has not been anointed, but nevertheless, according to Rabbi Meir, the same ruling applies to him. Alright, that's his opinion. So now the Gemara asks, B'mai Ukimna Dalok Rabbi Meir, tell me, why didn't you accept this opinion of Rabbi Meir, you know, and say that the talk of the halacha would follow him? So he says, well, Amos Sefer, I have to take a look at the next part of the Mishnah. Says, Ein ben koin mishamish nekoin sheovar, right? Elapraya makiporim, asirus voefa. Okay? Chol achol divrein, zevizev shovin. Okay? So, it's written what? That the only difference between a Kohen who is actually serving right now as compared to a Kohen who served for a while, right? And Kohen Gadol, of course, we're talking about, is the question of the bull that has to be offered up on Yom Kippur, and this Asiris Wafer, the tenth of an Eifer that we talked about. But in all other respects, right, they are exactly alike. They're bound by the same ruling. So it says, Esen the Rabbi Meir, okay, if I want to interpret this in the course of Rabbi Meir's opinion, the Tanya, we have a reference. There's a story that says, right, Yirabo Psul, right, what happens if some disqualification occurred to the Kohen Gadol, right? Umino Kohen Achet Hachtov, right? And then they appointed a different Kohen to serve in his place, as we said, as a backup, as a substitute, right? So it says, Rishon Chozel Avodaso, then the first Kohen Gadol resumes, as soon as he's able, the position again of being Kohen Gadol, and does, you know, his the service that he has to do in the Beis HaMikdash. Sheni, the second guy, the one who was the substitute, what is the rule concerning him? So he says, Kol mitzvahs kehuna gedola olav de Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says, all the mitzvahs that apply, all the commandments that apply to a Kohen Gadol, he also has to observe. Okay. So if he has to observe all of them, then in other words, the implication of Rabbi Meir would be that comes Yom Kippur, we have what? Two Kohanim? Each one is a Kohen Gadol. This one sacrifices his bull, and the other one sacrifices his bull. This would be the implication of Rabbi Meir, right? So, this is why the Chachamim disagree, okay? Rabbi Yossi over there, Rabbi Yossi says, no, he says, Rishon Kozla Godaso, Sheni Enu Ro'uri Lo Lekoin Godu Lo Kain Hedyo, right? Says, the first one Taka goes back again to performing his service, the Beis HaMikdash. But you know what happens to the second one? He's not either eligible to do those things that a Kohen Gadol has to do, nor is he eligible to do those things which an ordinary Kohen has to do.
Right.
Well, he's in limbo now.
Right.
The Omer Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi explains. Right. He says, Masib Rabbi Yossi ben Mitzipori. There's a certain... Rabbi Yossi ben Ulam who lived in Tzipori, who Sha'ira Bo Psul the Kohen Gadol. It so happened, you know, that the Kohen Gadol at his particular time had a disqualification. He was disqualified.
The main one.
It could be that maybe, you know, he had seminal admission. It could be that maybe something happened to him, he got hurt or something like that. I mean, it doesn't have to specify what exactly. But whatever it was, he was disqualified. Okay?
And he needed a substitute.
Right. Uminuhu tachtov. Okay? And what did they do with this Rabbi Yossi ben Ulam? They made him the Kohen Gadol in the place of the original one. And so then, you know, this incident was discussed by the rabbis. That they have to decide what to do now that they have two people who are Kohanim Gedolim, right? So the Amrut, so they said, Rishon Chov Zer Labudaso, the first one returns once more to his service in the Beis HaMikdash, and Sheini Einu Ravui, the second one is not eligible, Lo LeKohen Gadol, neither as a Kohen Gadol, Lo LeKohen Hedyo, nor even as an ordinary Kohen. Why? It says, Kohen Gadol, he cannot be again a Kohen Gadol right now while the other one is still there. Okay, why? Mishum Eva, because it will, enmity would arise.
Right, enemy, right.
Yeah, enmity.
Right.
In other words, the Kohen Gadol, right, the number one Kohen Gadol, you know, will be angry. And the number two will say, how come he is? I should be, right? So in order to avoid this feeling, right, so therefore he cannot be the Kohen Gadol. Okay. Kohen Hedyo, now why can't he be once more
a regular
Kohen?
Yeah.
That's for a different reason. It says Mishum, because we have a saying. Namely, it's Malin Bakoidish, but no more that we can raise somebody in holiness, but we do not lower him. Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. we have this applied in various places too. It's not just in this particular case where we say you've elevated him to Kohen Gadol, you cannot make him back into an ordinary Kohen. So that's it. Stays around the base of Mikdash, but there's nothing much you can do on it. Okay.
Wait, right. Maybe I'm not understanding this. Is this just for Yom HaKippur, or is this permanently?
Permanently.
He's permanently in this state.
Right.
Wow.
However, I'll tell you, the Rambam says as follows. Rambam says that if the original Kohen Gadol, the one who came back to the job, you know, if he passes away and they have to have a successor, then he has first. He's the first crack. Yeah. Okay.
But have they decided yet what's going to happen to him? I mean, he's neither here nor there.
He's neither here nor there, so that's it.
That's
okay.
It?
That's
they just leave him there?
Yeah. He's in the Beis HaMikdash, I don't know, he hangs around over there or whatever, maybe.
Yeah, but what about the benefits of the Kohen?
All right. Benefits he can have, okay. But restrictions also, okay? Benefit, for example, let's say, you know, there's a sacrifice of which the Kohen has a portion of, okay?
The Kohen Gadol has a double portion, right?
Yeah, he got the big
Kohen. Yeah, okay, he's entitled to take the biggest one. Not necessarily double, but he can take more than any gets because he gets first pick. Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, so if he wants the white meat instead of the brown meat or something, you know, okay. However, this Kohen, too, is also entitled, you know, to eat from sacrifices or to get challah or things like that. I mean, that is he's permitted to, or truma, and so, you know, these things that belong to a Kohen, he's still entitled to that, being a Kohen. But to serve in the Beis HaMikdash in the capacity of an ordinary Kohen, no, because he's already been elevated once in his lifetime, the Kohen Gadol. And on the other hand, as long as the other one is around, then he can't serve either in order to make sure that there won't be this jealousy between one and the other.
But he still wouldn't be the first one to do the pick. The main one would be the one to get the first pick.
Right, definitely.
But he'd come right after him, wouldn't he? Ahead of the other.
Maybe. Yeah. Yes.
That's a tough position to be in.
Pardon me?
Vice President.
Yeah, Vice President.
There you go. Oh, to travel. All right, you're right. That he's not allowed to do. Because it's written, Minamikdash lo yetze. Well, there are two different interpretations as to what it is. Interpretation number one, Minamikdash lo yetze, if we take him literally, means that he's not allowed to leave the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, they had the special apartment of the Kohen Gadol within the walls, more or less, of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? However, there's another interpretation Gemara gives in Sanhedrin, which means that he's not to leave the state of being Kodesh. Okay? And of course, that has to deal with, for example, he's not allowed to mourn. If he loses his father or his mother, then he can't do. Okay? Not allowed to do it. But the ordinary Kohen is obligated to mourn for his father, his mother, right? Brother, wife, you know, you name it, okay? But the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to do that. So that's a restriction placed upon the Kohen Gadol.
So the second one,
the second one would also be obligated.
He
has the same obligation. Kohen Gadol, if he decides to get married, he can only marry whom? A virgin. Sula, right? He's not allowed to marry a widow. He's not allowed to marry, of course. Okay. So the same thing applies to the person, you know, who has been the stand-in Kohen Gadol, that he can't marry anyone other than the virgin. Okay.
Where would he live? Did we decide that? Does he have to live on the premises as well? Like
well, maybe they'll apply it. Maybe they have an apartment for him too. This I don't know. I can't tell you that.
Doctor,
I'd like to ask you a class kosher question towards the end of the session. Where are you out here on your week of money? You know the law about the man that goes to the Ir Miklat?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once he's there, he cannot leave until the death of the Kohen.
Right,
now we
right.
have this situation. What is the law? Does he wait until the death of both of them?
No.
No, just the first.
No, only not, right.
Okay, just the first.
Just the first. Right. Yeah. Right, of course. Okay, let's finish this little portion over here. Okay. All right, so the Gemara says, Reisha Rabbonon, the Sefer Rabbi Meir. So he says the first part of the Mishnah sort of follows the teaching of the rabbis. The second part follows Rabbi Meir. So, Omer Avchista, he says, Reisha Rabbonon, the Sefer Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Yosef Omar says, Rabbi, this is not, that one follows one opinion, the other follows another. Rather, that this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the editor of the Mishnah, right? He quoted the text the way we have the various opinions given by the Tanoi, without personally committing himself to any definite decision.
Okay.
All right.
Now, I just want to introduce the next Mishnah, and we'll save the Gemara for next time, okay?
All right.
This is short. All right, so. Yeah, go for it. Okay.
First Mishnah. All right. Yeah.
All right. The Mishnah says, Ein bein boma gedola le boma katana ele pesachim. Okay. We know the word boma means literally a height, but it's not what it means over here. It means an altar that is put up. An altar which is. Okay. All right. Bima really is not exactly Bama, but the related ideas, okay? Alright. The Bama was a private altar, okay? It was a private altar. But there was also a Bama, an altar which existed in certain recognized sanctuaries, you understand? In other words, you can have your own personal Bama back. Before there was a Beis HaMikdash, right? But at the same time, there was obviously the sanctuary had its holy area, right? And then we find out, that the Mishkan, in other words, the sanctuary, once it came to Eretz Yisrael, right? So what do they do? So, for example, it might be in the city of Nov, as we know. From the story about Shaul and David and so on, Shaul had the Kohanim in the sanctuary of Nov slain because they helped David. Okay, right. Yeah. Or another place, Gibeon, also, and this would be, the days of the Shmuel and so on. Okay. At any rate, in those places, we had recognized sanctuaries, but at the same time, what did we have? We also had private sanctuaries, in other words, the private bubbles. All right.
But at the time of the temple, these were all outlawed.
Completely outlawed. Once the Beis HaMikdash was built. All right. Exactly. Yes. Right. Correct. Right. And there was a great deal of anger against it because, the thought on the part of the people of Israel was, there they go again. They're stealing from us. They don't want to have any part with us and so on. And so they had to say, oh God, the God of Israel. Say, right. Yeah, right. Okay. So you had both. Okay. So they're saying there is no difference between the Boma Gedola, which would be in the recognized sanctuary, right, as compared to the Boma Katana, which would be a person's own private Boma, Elipsochim, except for the Paschal sacrifices. Zaklal, this is the general rule. Kol Shehu Nidov and Nidov Korib B'Boma. Any kind of a sacrifice which simply is that I want to give a donation, so to speak, right. To the Beis HaMikdash. And we learned the difference between Neder and Nedova, that, in the one case he says, Hare Olai, I take upon myself the obligation, in which case, what happens if the animal gets lost or dies, then he still has to substitute by bringing another sacrifice. Whereas, if he would say, Hare Zu Olor, right? Then in that particular case, if this particular animal died or was stolen or whatever it may be, then in that case, his obligation is ended. Okay?
It's a deemed.
Yeah. But those, in any case, these are like private sacrifices that they bring. So they could be performed on a bomo katana, right?
Good question.
The whole chain of lo nidov in a karel bomo. But if it is not of that particular type, then in that case you cannot sacrifice upon a private altar. What are we talking about? Talking about, for example, a sin offering, a chatos, which had to be brought, you know, to the Kohen Godol, and not Kohen Godol, but to the Kohen, right, in order to perform it, or Osham, or something like that. Okay.
Shlomim also.
Shlomim already is a different story, because that's in the category of Nidah. Okay? So, the Mishnah mentions only Pesachim to indicate what? That the Paschal Lamb, even though it is Kochim Kalim, but nevertheless, it can only be sacrificed where? On a big bomb, right? But not in the private one. So they say, Vesulo, Pesachim Vesulo, and nothing else. So it says, Emor Kem Pesachim. So they say, all right, so say, in other words, that any sacrifice which is in the same category like Pesachim. So the question they want to know is Bani, who is the man whose opinion this represents? So they say, Rabbi Shimon. It's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The Tanya, as we have learned, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Av Tzipor, even the community itself, Lo Hikrivu El Pesachim Mechovet Shekavu Alehem Zman. That when you had a Boma Gedola, okay, then what kind of sacrifices were permitted over there, as compared to the sacrifices brought in Yerushalayim once the Beis Hamikdash was built? So the answer is, he says, yeah, they could bring to this Boma Gedola the Paschal offerings, and they could also bring those type of sacrifices over there that is offered in the base, in the Boma Gedola, those type of sacrifices which depend upon time. In other words, what? Like the daily Tamidim, right?
Right.
The sacrifice in the morning and in the afternoon, or the various Musafim. In other words, the sacrifices that have to be brought, additionally on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Yom Tov, and so on. Okay.
Dr. Miller.
Yes.
Before the temple,
yeah.
It was immediately the division of Kohanim and Levim and Israel was done.
That was
right
done
at the very beginning.
Sure.
When they left Egypt, they were already...
Correct. Because at that time...
They decided who was going to have... Who was going to start where in the land holding.
Right.
Now, the question I have, at that time, and there is no temple, was there a Kohen HaGadol?
Yes.
There was always
in the sanctuary, yes.
There was always...
Definitely,
well,
sure.
The traveling sanctuary. But let's go a little further into time...
The first Kohen,
where there was no, where they were no longer traveling around.
Let me just review one moment what
Hannah,
the history
Ellie,
is.
Remember
Sylvia,
Hannah, the story of Hannah and Ellie.
Right.
The
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me just review just for one moment.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just trying to get it straight.
All right.
Yeah.
When did we have Levim and Kohanim and so on? All right. Well, first of all, Levi was one of the tribes, so the son
was
of
right
Jacob. Okay.
Right.
All right. So the Levim, I guess, had a certain amount of sanctity to begin with. Okay.
Right.
Certainly in Egypt, the Levim were sort of like a privileged group among the people of Israel. Okay. Then, when the people of Israel left Egypt, Moshe was told to do what? To take his brother Aaron
and
make him into the Kohen Gadol. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, once Aaron becomes the Kohen Gadol, then his sons become Kohanim. Okay?
Right.
And one of them must always, there must always be a Kohen Gadol at all times. Okay. So that's the way it worked.
Okay.
All right, let me just finish this couple of lines over here.
Just about one line. That's
all right. After Malikuvel Pesachim B'Chayvus Shekavu Alehem Zman. Right. Aval chovos she'ein kavua lehem zman. But if there are obligations which have no fixed time, in other words, it's not in the category of the daily sacrifices or the additional sacrifices, then in that case, hocha v'hocha lo karach. Neither in the baba gadola nor in the baba katana can they be sacrificed. Okay. All right, we'll stop at this point. We're down at the bottom of the daf tes. I'm at base, and we'll continue Mr. Hashem at this time.
That's right.
Tonight is... What is it? Oh, yeah, the 31st of October. Right, okay. Thank you. And we are now at the bottom of Daf Tes, Omid Beis. The Mishnah right at the very bottom. It's the last three lines on this, and then we switch over to Daf Yud. Okay? And... this is not good for those who need it. Okay, yes. This is finally the last of the Ein Bains.
Ein Bains.
Yep. We finally reached the end of the line of Ein Bain, and we'll be getting back pretty soon to the Megillah and so on and things like that. Okay. Now, in the series that we've had of Ein Bain, we talk about that this and that, and there is one or two areas in which there is a difference between them, otherwise they are alike, right? And so in each case we've had an explanation. So the last one deals with the difference between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. If you remember from the book of at the very beginning of Shmuel Aleph, okay, we read on Rosh Hashanah, you know, because it happens to be the Haftorah, but it's also the first chapter over there. We read the story about how Hannah and her husband, they came to the tabernacle in Shiloh, and there, of course, Eli, the Kohen Gadol, was present over there, and of course, yes, and she prayed to the God that she should be blessed with a child, and so on and so forth. Okay. So, there are different places where the you know, the tabernacle wandered from one place to another, okay? No, Givon, etc. But Shiloh was the last place that it was, and then of course Shiloh itself was destroyed by whom? By the Philistines, if you remember. The Jews fought against the Philistines, and in the battle Shiloh was destroyed. Eli died when he heard the bad news that his sons, Hophni and Pinchas, had been killed in battle, that the Aron, the Ark, had been taken captive by the Philistines and brought to the land of the Philistines. So that was the end of Shiloh, okay? But nevertheless, it was a major sanctuary, more important than some of the other places that we refer to as being Bomos Gedolos. In other words, high sanctuaries, but not the same category. Remember, the previous one dealt with the difference between a Boma Gedola and a Boma Katana. So others were Boma Gedolas, but in Boma Katana, this is, you know, what people would have put up their own private mizbechas, and they would offer up sacrifices, as we learned, you know, things that were you know, nido, in other words, where they wanted to have what we would call shlomim, in other words, peace offerings or something like that, where the family could sit down to eat a meal and things like that. But we learned that it was prohibited, for example, to eat psachim over there. It was prohibited also to have any sacrifices that were not part of the daily ritual that was prescribed and so on. Okay. But Shiloh had a higher sanctity than the other places. Why? Because the very fact that we read about it in the Bible with, you know, that it plays an important role in the first chapters of the book of Shmuel. Okay? So, the Mishnah deals with the fact that Ein Bein Shiloh Yerushalayim, they were both major sanctuaries, but Ella, what is the but? Shabishilo Ochlin Kotchim Kalim Masa Sheni Bakul Haroa Vushalayim Liftim Nachoma. Okay. Question is, you know, that when you sacrifice Kotchim Kalim, Kotchim Kalim, as I said, these are things like the Thanksgiving offering, peace offerings, things of that nature, okay? These are Kotchim Kalim. Primarily, in other words, they are sacrifices where the family sits down and they eat and they share with the Kohanim, and some of it, you know, is burnt on the altar, okay? So, there is, however, a specified area where they can be eaten, but if you take it outside that specified area, then in that case, that's what is called eating mechutz latchum, outside the boundary, and that would render it possible, okay? Makes it invalid.
Render the sacrifice, exactly.
Okay? And the person, you know, who gets it, he could get malchus as a punishment, you know, for violating a definite commandment, okay? Okay, so, in Shiloh, the area in which this could be consumed would be wherever it's possible to see Shiloh, or Shiloh could see this immediate area, okay? Because why? Shiloh did not have any wall around it, and since it was an open city, so that therefore the question is, what were the boundaries of it? So the boundaries would be as far as the eye could see, yeah, but not
sight,
beyond. Right.
Sight.
Okay. So that's where it had to be consumed. Mm-hmm. However, in Yerushalayim, if you brought a sacrifice, then it had to be, and it's Kotchim Kalim, okay? Then it has to be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. That's what it means, Lifnim and Achimah, the inside of the wall. In other words, within the walls of Yerushalayim, whereas what happens if you take it outside? You get punished for that, right? Okay. Then it says, "V'chan v'chan," both places, "kotshe kadoshim." In other words, sacrifices which are holy of holies, as for example, chatos. Okay, chatos is a sin offering, or an osham, which is a trespass offering. Okay. Difference between chatas and osham is, first of all, the type of animal which is offered, and secondly, for what reason they are being offered. In the case of chatas, there's a general rule. You were not aware, you forgot, you know, that a certain thing is prohibited, okay? You become aware of it, you realize that you know you violated a prohibition, then in that particular case you bring a sin offering in order to atone. Okay, so that's the chatas. The osham is for certain specified things that the Torah itself mentions. As for example, you have asham gezela. In other words, you stole something, you have to make restitution, but you could also be penalized in order to get on, you know, to get
to
square with the Rebbeinu Shalom, right? So then in that case, you'd have to bring an osham, okay? And there are some others, right?
Even though you replaced the...
Even though replaced it, right, but, you know, you did wrong, and so therefore you have to make up for it in that particular way. Asham Mitzora, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, let's say a person was suffering from leprosy, and, you know, he comes to the Beis HaMikdash after he counted, you know, after he was clean, and he counted, and he had the Kohen went through the ritual of purifying him, and then... you know, he had to also bring an osham. He had to bring trespass offering. All right. Now, the rule with both chatos and osham is the fact that it has to be eaten by zichrei kahuna. In other words, called zochor, but they are only of that it says in the Torah, or as it says in the Zehu Mekayman, you know, which summarizes these things. In other words, they had to be male kohanim. Okay. And it has to be eaten lifnim in hakloyim, which means literally within the hangings.
Now, within the what?
Hangings. Kloyim are like curtains, hangings.
Hangings.
Okay, yes. Now, in Yerushalayim, they didn't have hangings anymore, but we'll see a reference to it. I don't know. It's written over there. I'm telling you from my knowledge. Okay. And the Mishkan originally, of course, that's the reason why we use the expression. Exactly. Because the Torah was in the time, you know, when the Torah has these rules, it's in connection with the Mishkan. And of course, in the Mishkan, you know, they had hangings in order to separate one area from another, or what it may be, okay? All right. So, the Mishnah then says over there, but v'chan v'chan, right, in both Shiloh and in Yerushalayim, kodshei kodoshim, those sacrifices which we call the, you know, the very holy ones, had to be eaten, echolun efdim nakloim, right, within the, literally within the hangings, which means, in other words, in the Beis HaMikdosh itself, Yerushalayim had to be eaten within
the temple.
The temple itself cannot be eaten outside the Beis HaMikdosh by the Kohanim, right? And as we saw, you know, well, the same thing applied in Shiloh as well. Okay, in other words, if let's say Eli HaKohen offered up a sacrifice, or his sons offered, you know, they couldn't take the stuff home. They had to eat it within the sanctuary.
No gorgy beds.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. Now, there is another mention, there is another differentiation mentioned now in the Mishnah between Shiloh and Yerushalayim. Not just, you know, what the area would be, but Kedushas Shiloh, this is the last two words on the Tesamid Beis, right? The holiness of Shiloh. So we continue out with the next page over there. It says, Yesh Achareha Heter. After Shiloh was destroyed, then in that case, what happened? Then once more, people were permitted to eat at the private bubbles, to eat sacrifices, okay?
Oh, the private
altars that they had, exactly, okay? Whereas the Kedushas Yerushalayim, once the Beis HaMikdosh was established in Yerushalayim, then Ein Achareha Heter. Then from that point on, you're not allowed to eat any sacrifice outside of what?
Outside of
either the temple or outside of Yerushalayim, okay? Of course, as we said, there's a difference, you know, depending upon the type of the sacrifice. Okay. We had, for example, also Ma'aser Sheni, for example, we studied that, and we saw that Ma'aser Sheni had to be brought to Yerushalayim and eaten there, but it could be eaten anywhere within Yerushalayim. But you're not allowed to do what? Not allowed to take Ma'aser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. So, it's the same. But that's if the stuff that you're bringing in is liable to rot away, is spoiled, you know, by the time you bring to Yerushalayim, then in that case you
convert it.
Yes, you sell it, and the money you save, and then you have to use it in Yerushalayim for eating and drinking and so on. Okay? But in any case, whatever you, once it's brought into the Beis HaMikdosh, then you cannot take it outside of Yerushalayim anymore. Okay?
Practically,
yeah.
If you're eating it for a day, I mean, how long could food
in that kind of? Yeah, well, that's a different story. I mean, certain sacrifices I pointed out, for example, the Todah, the Thanksgiving offering, the Torah says that it has to be eaten the day that you bring it, and also that night you could eat it. But you're not allowed to let it go beyond that because it's going to be considered pigle the following morning. As soon as it's daybreak, that's it. But some of the other shlomim, on the other hand, you know, peace offerings, they you could eat yom, you could eat, you know, that day, that night, and the following day as well. But as soon as it became night on the following, in that particular case, then that was the end of that too. Okay, so because it says, you know, by yom hashlishi pigulhu, if it's left over.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it good enough? You explained about.
Yes. Okay. Okay. All right. Let me explain once more. Okay. It came a little late, so maybe this is my previous explanation. All right. In the time of the Mishkan, right? How did they how did they divide off areas and so on? The answer is that they had hangings in order to do it. And this is what the Torah calls Kloyim, Kalei Chotzer, and so on and so forth, okay? This is a Kloyim. So, therefore, as long as you had tabernacles, then in that particular case, the term Kloyim really had meaning. In other words, because as they continue to use these hangings in order to partition the areas, okay? So that what he's saying over here is then that in any case, in Shiloh, while you could, for example, take Kochim Kalim, in other words, Thanksgiving offering, peace offering, you could take those and eat it as far as
the
you
can
either see Shiloh or Shiloh can see. Now, after the Beis HaMikdash was built, obviously, eventually they had stone partitions, or whatever it may be, right? But they did not use curtains necessarily, okay? So, but the term is still used by our sages in order to refer to the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash, okay?
Sure.
So that if it is Koche Kodoshim, which means, in this particular case, either a chatos or an osham, okay? It cannot mean ola, because the ola has to be burned completely. Hi, Yaakov. You're at a meeting. Okay, very good. The yola is a burnt offering, so nobody eats it, not even the kahan, okay?
Completely burnt.
All right. Yeah, it has to be completely burnt. Okay. Yeah, except that the skin can be cut off and then used.
So nobody has a nui from it.
Given to the Kohen, and the Kohen could use it, right?
Hmm? Nobody has a nui from it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
When they refer to the Homa, what are they talking about?
Okay. Now, Kochim Kalim had to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Once it was built, it had to be eaten within the walls of the base of the city of Yerushalayim. In other words, let's say it's a Thanksgiving offering, okay? So you're enjoying it together with your family, so on, okay, whatever. All right, you have your family over there, we're all feasting. You want to invite some friends? Fine. You want to invite a Levi? By all means, come invite him too, okay? And the Kahanim, they get their share first, okay? They get the chaza and the shokayabim, in other words, the right leg, they get that, and then the fat is burnt on the altar, okay? The chelim has to be burnt on the altar, and so there's certain other things that are burnt on the altar. All right, but the point is that if you are a layman bringing in, you're allowed to take the food out and eat it anywhere within Yerushalayim. That's what they mean by
within the
Tzimel
HaChomer.
Right, okay. Right, but they're not allowed to take it outside of the wall. It has to be eaten within. Okay. Now, since the Kohanim had to eat the Chatas and the Yoshim, which are called Kosher Kodoshim, okay, they had to be eaten within the sanctuary itself. Okay, so the term that was used in the Torah would be, within the hangings, right.
Okay.
So this term became used even to the Beis HaMikdash, even though they had more substantial walls than Kloyim itself. But this is where the Kohanim had to eat it. They had to eat it within the precincts of the Beis HaMikdash itself.
Yeah.
That's what they mean by the in my plate. Okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
What happens with leftovers?
Leftovers have to be burned. Either you eat it up, right, or in order to make sure that, none of it is going to be used for beyond, where it becomes what they call pigul. No good, spoiled, no good. So we have, the Torah says, V'anosor, for example, V'anosor v'yom ha'shlishi. In one case it says that whatever remains until the third day, so ba'esh tisarev, it has to be burned in fire. So that's what happens to okay?
And ashes removed from...
Yeah, the ashes after you, they're going to be removed. But the point is... Yeah, right, but it has to be burned, okay? Yeah. All right. Now, Gemara continues, Daf Yud. Okay. Very interesting historical reference that we have over here. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak said as follows. He says, Shamati, you know, I heard Shemakrivim Meveis Konyu Basman Hazeh. I heard that they still carry on sacrifices in the temple that was put up by Chonyo, and I'll explain that in a second, even at this time. Okay. Well, this already poses various problems. Okay. First of all, who is this Chonyo? Mm-hmm. And where is this temple situated? Okay. Chonyo, and by the way, Josephus calls him Onias. Okay, you know, the Greeks couldn't say Chonyo, so they made Onias. Okay. so he had a fight, probably with the Chashmonaim, who also wanted to, they were also Kahanim, if you remember. Okay. And they wanted the job for themselves. They wanted, so he had a fight with them, and he decided that he would take his goodies and go to Egypt. And there he built a temple which was supposed to be a duplicate of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Okay? And he offered up sacrifices over there because, after all, he was a Kohen, and he considered himself a Kohen Gadol. Okay? And naturally he had others, you know, other followers who were also Kohanim and so on. And that existed for several centuries. It was in Egypt, a place called Leontopolis or something like that. Okay? In other words, Lion City. Okay? And for several centuries the temple stood over there. It was destroyed, but maybe in the time of Rabbi Yitzchak it is possible that they rebuilt it again, and that they were sacrificed. Because the question is, what does it mean when he says Basman Hazeh at this time? Does it mean contemporary with Rabbi Yitzchak? Rabbi Yitzchak was already, maybe about the third, fourth generation of Tanoim, you understand? But maybe Basman Hazeh means, you know, that even in recent times that they were still sacrificing over there. Okay? And of course, this is a direct contradiction to what? To the fact that Yerushalayim is the only true sanctuary, and anybody who builds a sanctuary outside, you know, it's invalid, you understand? So, follows upon the fact that we're saying, you know, it's like considering, let's say, a Boma Gadola, right? But there's no question that the Bomos no longer were legal once the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim. This is what it says over there, you know, that until Yerushalayim, so they had a heter. In other words, that they couldn't do it. But once Yerushalayim was built, then in that particular, I mean, the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and started to function, then in achre heter, you're not allowed to establish a sanctuary outside of the Elisha life, and offer up sacrifices over there. Yeah, but we're talking, a mission goes back 1,000 years before that, you understand? Well, it's not 1,000 years. All right, anyway, 400, almost 500 years before, okay? Because it's written in Melachim Aleph that King Solomon dedicated the Beis HaMikdash 480 years after the Jews left Egypt, okay? So we know from that particular date that it's almost 500 years that the Mishkan existed. Do you understand? But then superseded by what? Superseded by the Beis HaMikdash.
How can they have outside temples and they have a Mishkan?
No, this is later.
We are mixing up. What we said is, first of all, the Mishkan was not a temple. Okay? It was a sanctuary, but not a temple. And we said also that when they came to Eretz Yisrael, they were permitted to set up bomos, not in the wilderness, but in Eretz Yisrael they were permitted to set up their own private altars, as long as what? As long as there was no Beis HaMikdash. Okay? And there they could offer up what we call kochim kalim, but they could not offer up kochim kadoshim. Okay? So that's what we said.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have to get these things in the, you know, historical perspective, I mean, in order to understand this business. Okay? All right. So, at any rate, he says, look, I heard that they, you know, in Beis Chonya, even our own time, more or less, or they were still sacrificing over there. So, on what basis would he come with an objection and say, you know, that, I mean, because the implication of what he has to say is what? The implication is, you know, and that's a legitimate
sacrificial place,
right. So,
well,
all right, so how could he say something like that? No, but that's what I'm trying to analyze right now. Okay, so the Gemara comes up with one explanation. It says, because so far he was of the opinion that Beis Chonya loved Beis Avodah Zarah. First of all, it says it was not a place for idol worship, but it was meant in order to be established as a sanctuary for the worship of whom? The Rebbeinu Shlomo. Uh-huh. Okay. Because of our, besides, he had another opinion. The other opinion is, Kedusha Rishonah Kitcha L'Shato V'lo Kitcha L'Osid L'Vei. That when Yerushalayim was built, so the Kedusha was valid during the time that was, that it was unconquered, and not destroyed, you know. But once Nebuchadnezzar came and he destroyed Yerushalayim, mm-hmm. and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, then in that case, it was not sanctified, you know, for all throughout time. Okay?
That's a really revolutionary thought.
Well, it's a machlokas.
Wow,
right. This is his opinion.
Amazing.
All right? So in other words, he says that the Kedusha, the first Kedusha, in other words, when, you know, King Solomon dedicated it as a Makom Kodesh, right?
Yeah.
So it was served during the time that it was in existence, but below Kitchen lost it only, but not for the future, all right? And based it upon a Pasuk, the Pasuk happens to be in Devarim, where it says, Ki lo vosim adoto, you still have not yet reached what? El hamenucho v'el hanachalot. Neither the menucha, which means literally to rest, and nor to the possession that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is giving you. In other words, you have not yet reached Eretz Yisrael, where you're finally able to rest from wars against your enemies, and able to possess the land which Hashem has given to you as your possession. But they take the words menucha, nachlo, and they say menucha, that means Shiloh did not yet even get as far as Shiloh yet to establish that, and Nachlo to Yerushalayim, right? Whereas Yerushalayim, this is the real heritage, and the Gemara says Bakish Nachlo leMenucha, and he makes a comparison between Nachlo and Menucha, in other words, between the two, to say what Ma Menucha, when it comes to a place where they finally are able to rest from their batteries. In other words, after Shiloh, which he identified with the word Menucha, right? So just as in the case of Shiloh, once it was destroyed, then what? We know that bombs were permitted everywhere. How do we know that? Well, for example, we find Shmuel Hadavi, okay? Shiloh was destroyed. We read about that in the first few chapters of Shmuel Aleph, right? But then Shmuel grows up, and what does he do? He becomes a Novi, okay? And he becomes a judge, right? And he goes around from one place to another. And wherever they know that Shmuel is coming, so what do? They make a sacrifice over there and invite everybody to come and have a feast, okay? So it shows, you know, that the Bubbos were in operation after Shiloh was destroyed. They went back again, okay? So, he felt that the reason why the Pasuk compares both Menucha and Nachla is to say that Ma Menucha Yesh Acharei Heter, which just as in the case of Shiloh, there, you know, the bombings again became legitimate. So Afnachlo, so likewise he says, Yerushalayim, even once it was destroyed, Yesh Achareha Heter. It shows that bombings, in other words, any place you could begin to sacrifice again, outside. Okay?
Since Jerusalem was destroyed, yeah. Shiloh was destroyed.
Right, okay. So now they challenge it. And they say, Amrulay, so they said to him, Amrit, is this what you really say? Amaluhu, lo yamar. So he said to them, I say, Amaluhu, lo. He said, no, not really, this is not what I said. Amar Rava, so Rava said, Alakim, he says, oh by God, so help me, you know. Amara, he did say that.
He
not only did he said, you know, that you know that you could.
He swears at it.
Right. He says that you, you know, he did say, you know, that Chonio is a legitimate place, based Chonio, right, and so on and so forth, and that you know, the first kedusha, it was only for its own time, but that the kedusha did not extend to afterwards, you know, after the destruction. It says he said it. I learned this from him. So the question is, my Tamaka Hanabay, so tell me, so why did he retract what he said? You know, first he says, I heard this, and then he says, yeah, he said it. No, he says, right? So why did he retract? So the answer is, Mishum Kasha the Rav Mori. He says he did so because Akasha was raised by Rav Mori concerning this. The most of Rav Mori, because Rav Mori asked the following question, he says, Kiddusha Shiloh Yesh Achareha Heter, right? Okay, granted, that the sanctity of Shiloh, once it was destroyed, then Bombas were again forbidden, right? Kiddusha Yerushalayim, but when it comes to Yerushalayim, Ein Achareha Heter. Then from that point on, there's no free-for-all from that particular point. Sacrifices are legitimate only in one place, namely
Jerusalem.
Where? In Yerushalayim. And that's it. The Yotanan. And besides, we learned in another place. It says, Mishabol Yerushalayim. From the moment that the Jews came to Yerushalayim, in other words, they conquered Yerushalayim, they settled the Beis HaMikdash, then from that point on, Nesru HaBomos. Then the Bomos were
forbidden.
The Lohi Olehem owed Heter, and they no longer had any permission literally given to them to function anymore. The Hiho Yisol and Achalot, and Yerushalayim became what? The Dachalot. Okay? Became the possession of the Jewish people, and from that point on, no Kedusha outside Yerushalayim.
Inheritance.
Okay, right. Our inheritance. So, Gemara says, alright, so in other words, apparently he's contradicting himself, so how do we explain it? So he says, Tanoi, he says, you know what? We find that this goes back already to a machloikis of the Tanoi. What is a machloikis? Okay. So they quote, other Rabbi Eliezer says as follows, he says, Shamati, I heard, he says, Kishehoyu bonim b'heichol, that when they were rebuilding the sanctuary, of course, I'm talking over here about the Bayis Sheni, about the second temple. When they started to rebuild the second temple, well, you know, it's a very, very gingerly process. What happened, he says, Osin Koloyim Lahechol or Koloyim Lazora. They didn't immediately start with stones. The very first thing that they had to do is what? To partition off the general area, let's say what we call the Azorah, in other words, the courtyard that was to be established, from what? From the Heichol, in other words, from the you know, the area which would contain the Holy of Holies. So how did they do it? They curtained it off. Us in Kaloyim. They put hangings, okay. But, Elo, however, there's a difference where, while they were doing the building. Okay, which means that where were the hangings placed? So he says, outside the holier part of the sanctuary, They put the hangings on the outside, right? Excuse me, they didn't. They put it really on the inside. They put it on the inside, but they were building outside of it. In other words, they could put up the walls of the area, you know, but it was curtained off by hanging so that they should not go into the more holy area, right? And then when they were working to build the Azara, in other words, the regular courtyard area over there, which is not as sacred, you know, as the Heichal, so then there they would be able to build within, and the hangings naturally were on the outside in order to demarcate, you know, the area that they would be working. Okay, so the Omer Rabbi Yeshua said, you know, I also heard something. Says Shemati, I heard Shema Krivin Afal Pishen Bias. Yeah, I heard. He says Shema Krivin that they offer up sacrifices. In other words, they are permitted to sacrifice Afal Pishen Kloyim, even though there are not. Let's see, did I skip something? Yeah. Shemati Shemak Rivim Afalpisha ain't bias. Right. He says, I heard, you know, that you're permitted to bring sacrifices even though there is no actual temple in existence. In other words, if we would follow this, we would bring sacrifices today, right?
Right.
Yeah. And Ochlin, and you're permitted to eat Kodshe Kodoshim. Right? In other words, even such things like the Chatas and the Yashem,
wow,
permitted
true?
To eat them, of course, I mean, Kahanim would eat them, Afal Pisha and Kloyim, even though there are no Kloyim, even though there's no partitions over there. And Kochim, Kalim, and Masa Sheni, and you're permitted to eat, you know, the Kochim, Kalim, and Masa Sheni, second when. In any area, Afal Pishen Chaimah, even though the wall of Yerushalayim has been destroyed, it doesn't exist. Why? Because according to Rav Yeshua, Neisha Kedusha Rishayno Kitcha Lishatom, because when they sanctified Yerushalayim, when they sanctified the Beis Hamikdash of Yerushalayim, they did it not only Lishato, in other words, for the immediate time, which would mean as long as it was in existence, but also the kitcha, the osed lave, and he sanctified it for the future as well. Meaning that even though the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, but the kedusha that they sanctified the area in the time of King Solomon, this is for all times. It makes Yerushalayim city of holiness, and therefore he says you're permitted to eat sacrifice and so on. Well, it's a very revolutionary idea, right?
Then you can set up sacrifices anywhere then.
According to this opinion that he heard, correct.
Yeah, so we can have one here, right?
Yeah, Tell you the truth.
But
many,
this doesn't make too much sense, even in its own definition, because he says that you can eat outside the walls.
He said that you can eat even though there is no wall in existence.
Oh, there's no wall. Okay,
there's no wall. That's what he's trying to say.
Right, that's
just as
different.
There is no Beis Hamikdash.
Right. That's okay. That's
so. Likewise,
different.
Even if there's no wall, you're permitted
right,
to eat
right,
to the
right,
kosher
right.
Okay. That's what he's saying. Okay.
Thank you.
That's only after Beis Hamikdash and the Shiloh was destroyed. Right?
We're talking once the Beis Hamikdash was built, Shiloh lost its
inoperative.
First of all, it was destroyed by the Philistines, as I mentioned, and it would not function again anymore because its holiness was only as long as it was in existence. Okay? Whereas Yerushalayim, he's saying that even though it may
destroyed.
Be destroyed, but the Kedusha exists
remains.
Right to this very day for the future as well.
If we believe this, there would be Kohanim eating right outside the Dome of the Rock.
Yes. This is, of course, you know, we have other problems. We have other problems. But as you can see, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua. He says, I heard what he says. I heard he means that I had a tradition to this effect from a very authoritative source, right?
Maybe they still have Paraguba at the time they could go up there.
Whatever, it's possible. I mean, you know, we don't do it anymore. This is obvious. We don't do it, okay? We don't do it. No, for Aduma, not only that, there's a question about the sanctity of some of the Kahanim, you know, they would have to be retested or something like that, I guess. You remember when we had, we learned Kiddush in the last chapter of the Asura Yuchzin, you know, and we learned, you know, that not all the Kahanim were accepted.
Mm-hmm.
As being legitimate for the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Part of the reason being because there were Kohanim who preferred to stay in Babylonian, they did not want to come back to Yerushalayim. So they sort of legitimized them. I mean, they didn't say that they're not Kohanim, but you know, that they felt that that they could not function in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay.
Even if they did come back.
Right, right. And also we learned over there, the Gemara, you know, that they had courts in order to determine the validity of their yichus to make sure. Okay.
What was this in Kedusha you said?
Yeah, last chapter in Kedusha we had that. Right.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it speaks about Asor Yuchsin, in other words, they had different categories of Jews. You had Kahanim, you had Levium, you had Yisraelim, then you had others of lesser sanctity and so on and so forth in order to determine, you know, who are legitimate Jews. Of course, the ultimate reason was in order to know who can marry with whom.
Yeah.
So this was part of the business, you know, to take a look and to find out the yichus and so on.
Must have been some problem when they came back.
Of course they had a problem.
Who was the Gotel and so forth.
Yeah,
and so
right,
on.
No question about that. All right.
Well, there must have been a lot of political arguments there.
Well, that's a different problem. But obviously, it's, you know, they had their problems.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. I just wanted to add one word. Rav Shenkov on the Mishalom quoted this particular Weimar that we just read in order to say that maybe it might be legitimate, for example, to offer a Korban Pesach even today.
Really?
Yeah. But of course, obviously, neither he nor anybody else, you know, would said, you know, from a theoretical point of view, he felt it might be possible. He felt, you know, that theoretically, it might be possible to do it.
You'd have to build an altar and so on, you know.
Yeah, all right, that we understand. Problem is, of course, that when in 67 Jews had a chance to do something, you know, they didn't do what they should have done.
Take over the mountain.
Yeah, to take over. If not the entire mountain, at least to take over part of the mountain. Yeah. All right.
Almost
so at any rate, to continue over here. All right, yeah.
We are.
There are many different viewpoints.
Yeah,
I'll
be right. Yeah, that's true.
Right. I mean, there are two
viewpoints.
Right.
But it seems to me
the
pragmatic.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
maybe by accident they should have blown up. Not purposely. Right?
So, still sanctified ground now, even today?
Pardon me?
If that, by according to this.
Yeah, according to this, in other words, it would be permitted to take at least part of the Temple Mount and offer up a sacrifice on it.
Who knows?
It's not a question of yichus right now. Okay, we don't know. The question is also, you know, there are many problems, but one of them is, of course, this whole political problem. I don't have to tell
you.
All right. So, at any rate, since we heard all these varying opinions, it says Miklal. So, in that case, then we have to come to a conclusion the Rabbi Eliezer Zovar, that he was of the opinion, what? Lo kitshon eset mavi. In other words, because he said, you know, that...
Initial sanctity did not sanctify
right.
for all future
right.
times.
Right. Right, that the sanctity was not for the future, but only for its immediate
time. Not permanent.
Right. So, Amalei Ravina Ravashi, so Ravina said to Ravashi, because remember, there are later authorities, so what he says, Mimai, how do you come to that conclusion, he says. Dilmo de chulei alma kedusha rishenu kitshon eshata v'kitshon latid lovei. Maybe, he says, as a matter of fact, both Rabbi Eliezer and everybody else are of the opinion that what? That the first kedusha, in other words, the days of Shlomo HaMelech, the sanctification was not only the Shato for, you know, as long as it was in existence, but it's also for the future as well.
Yeah.
So, then what do we have over here? He says, Umar, my Dushabir, Leik Omar, Umar, my Dushabir, Leik Omar. In other words, the different authorities. This one says what he had heard from his Rebbe, and the other one says what he had heard from his Rebbe.
Mm.
So, they're all in agreement,
which is
I'm telling you, I heard my Rebbe say this and this, okay? So, my Rebbe said this, and my Rebbe, the other one says, and my Rebbe said this, okay? V'chi teimor, and if you say as follows, Gloyim, the Rabbi Eliezer Lomeli. Now, if that's the case, Rabbi Eliezer, who said that when they rebuilt the second base HaMikdash, remember he said they had hangings over there, Gloyim.
Mm-hmm.
While they went on, you know, with the building, the walls, and so on
right.
and so forth. So, why was it necessary? So he says, Tznius of Alma. They did it because they wanted, you know,
privacy.
To observe Tznius, you know, the proper attitude, you know, towards it. So that's the reason why. So, Elokei HaTanai, so they say, okay, so maybe the Machlokes was on a different basis. Maybe it's a Machlokes based on the following argument that we have among Tanoim. The Tanya, as we have learned, Omer Rabbi Yishmael, the Rabbi Yossi, Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, said, Lomo Monu Chachomim Es Elu. Question is, why did the sages mention certain cities? Now, these cities, in general, you know, they mentioned certain walled cities, okay? Sages mentioned certain walled cities. Shekeshe alubne agoylo motu esay levekichu, says, when the people who returned from the Gola, you know, from Golas Bovil, came back there, which is Israel, so they found these particular places, and they sanctified them. Abol HaRishonais, Botlu, Bishop Botlu Horetz. But the earlier ones that were mentioned, let's say, in the book of Yahushua, they had lost their Kedusha when the land, you know, was destroyed. Okay? So Almo, from this, we come to the conclusion, Kotsovar, that he's in the opinion that Kedusha Rishon Kitshon Shato, right, that the first, the earlier Kedusha, it did it for its own time, but below Kitshon was it loving, because why then would the people coming back from Babylonian exile have to rebuild
and resanctify
a different area, right? So Raminhu, and we learned another contradictory statement which says, Omer Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, again Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi, and he says, Techielu Bilvad Hayu, only these cities that have been mentioned, Valok von Emar, don't we have other cities that are already mentioned, many more, namely Shishamir, Kol Hevel Argo, for example, the Torah speaks about sixty cities in the region of Argo, Uksiv, and concerning these cities it's written Kol Eile, all of these are Orin, Bitsuros, Chomo, Gevuho, right? That these cities are all fortified with a high wall. So, in other words, when the Chachamim came, they mentioned a couple of places, you know, for example, about the barrier. If you remember, we had much earlier in this chapter. as to whether Tiberia would be considered a city, you know, surrounded by a wall, so that you would do what? So you would read the Megillah on the 15th day,
right,
and read on the 14th.
Right, no.
And that they mentioned one or two others, like they mentioned Sipori, if you remember.
Right.
Right. There are different places that they mentioned. So, but why? So why did the sages then mention these things?
Only these.
Right? So he says, when the people returned to the Babylonian exile, so Matsu Elu, they found these places, the Kitchum, and they sanctified them, yeah? So he says, Kitchum? They sanctified them? Why weren't they sanctified when? In the days of Joshua, right? Okay, at this point we need the next one. Yeah, it should be. It should begin with the word Hashta.
Yeah.
Hashta. Right. Now they had to do it. So, Amre, so they said, Lots, we call the Kiddushe, they really did not have to be re-sanctified. Okay? Elamotsu Asena, but they came to these particular places that they mentioned. I mean, and they mentioned them. The Loelu Bilvad, but not only these, but there are others as well. Elakol Shatal, then the Choma, Soris Biyotchami Avasecha. But wherever you have a tradition from your fathers, in other words, from your ancestors, Semukefas, Choma, Bimosheshim, Minun, that these places were surrounded by a wall in the days of Yeshua bin Nun, right? Then in that case, call our mitzvot halolun or hagin bo. Then all the various commandments concerning a city which is surrounded by a wall are valid. The work in this place, as for example, we learned what concerning the reading of the Megillah. If it's a walled city, when do you read it?
On the
15th, right?
Yeah.
Not the 14th, you read it on the 15th.
Yeah.
But there are other things, too, that the Torah mentions concerning a walled city. As, for example, person sells property. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We learned in, you know, in connection in Bahar, Parsha Bahar, where they speak about Jubilee year and so on. Okay? So we learned that, for example, let's say you sell your property, but what happens in the Jubilee year comes back to you, right? Okay. So that being the case, it means that this land that I sell you cannot be sold permanently, okay? But where does it apply? It applies only on stay hasod. In other words, fields, literally, and it would apply, therefore, if a city, for example, had no wall around it, then it would be considered, in this case, like Orei Hasana. Okay? So, in other words, if I would sell my house to you right now, in the year of Jubilee, I get back my house from you.
Right.
Okay.
You don't pay for it, you just get it back.
I get it back. Okay. On the other hand, well, entitled, you know, to get a certain amount, let's say, you know,
rebate,
whatever it may be, right? Because if a person sells his field, for example, so they count how many years before Jubilee comes,
right.
And on that basis, you know, that's the amount that you have to pay for rental in the area of the property, okay? But then, you know, you get back, okay. However, what is the law concerning a city which has a wall?
One year, exactly.
Within a year, right, it's your house, but at the end of a year, if the original owner doesn't try to redeem it, then in that case, that becomes yours permanently. Okay? So, this is another rule that it applies to a walled city. So, that's what they mean by mitzvahs. Okay? There's another rule, too. They put down in the Zohar, a leper has to be sent outside of a walled city, so in order not to infect people. Okay? So, these are some of the things. Okay? So, Kol Mitzvot Dagim Bo Mipnei Shekedusha Rishona, right? Because the first sanctification, Kitcha L'Shato V'Kitcha L'Osid Lovei, right? In other words, the sanctity continues even after it was destroyed, you know, the first time. Okay.
All future time.
Right. So, it says, Kashin Rabbi Yishmael Ad Rabbi Yishmael. So he says, look, here we have two contradictory statements made by Rabbi Yishmael. So he says, okay, so the answer is Trei Tanoi Alibud Rabbi Yishmael or Rabbi Yossi. So the answer is, well, each one had a different tradition of what he had heard of what Rabbi Yishmael or Rabbi Yossi had said. Okay. The Iboy Simon, if you wish, or Rabbi Elozabar Yossi. It's not Rabbi Yishmael, but it's a different one. It's for Elozabar Yossi. He's the one who said it. The Tanya, because we have another statement that says, Rabbi Elozabar Rabbi Yossi Omari says, taking a look at the business about the walled city, says, Ir Asher Lo Chomor. Now, that can be read in two ways. Okay? It could be read, a city which has a wall, which is the traditional way, but why does it have an aleph at the end?
I don't know why.
It's to show that it doesn't have a wall.
An aleph.
So he explains, right. Yeah, because lo with an aleph means
no.
No, right?
That's right, low.
It means it doesn't have a wall.
Yeah, it means
no. He explained it as follows. Afal pisha ein lo achshav, oya lo kalim lachain. In other words, this city, even though now it does not have a wall, right? That's the low with the olive, right? But nevertheless, well, you know, it had, it did have a wall called a mechain before, and therefore what? Therefore, the holiness that it possessed as a walled city, even if the wall was subsequently destroyed, but
still remains.
It still remains, right?
Rabbi, I have an issue here. I don't want to complicate.
Yeah, we'll stop at this point. Yeah, but go ahead. Let's hear.
All right.
Okay,
no, you can't.
We're about to continue now from where we left off last week. First of all, to identify the date today, there's already the 7th of November in 2001. We are on Maseches Megillah, Yud Amud Beis. Yud Amud Beis, okay, 10b, as we would say, okay? At this particular point, the nature of the Gemara changes quite a bit. In what way? We know that we have a Gadata in the Gemara, right? And usually it's based upon the fact that the same author made a statement here, made another statement over there, and so on and so forth, okay? So we've had plenty of examples of that. And we saw also that the Agadah is always interspersed with Halacha as well, okay? Here, what we have actually is more in the nature of what we call Midrash, okay? In other words, we take a text of the Bible, whatever it may be, whatever passage it may be, and we interpret it. We're going to see that right now we have sort of like a Midrash upon Megillas Esther, and is going to continue from the very first pasuk eventually to the concluding passage. Okay, so for the next couple of weeks or so, we'll be learning Agada. Okay, Agada, right? Okay. Now, as an introduction to this, we start first of all with the very first pasuk. All right, what does it say in the Megillah? It starts with the words, Vayehi b'mei Achashverosh. It came to pass in the days of Achashverosh, right? So, we have a quotation now, Omer Rabbi Levi. So Rabbi Levi said, V'yitemor Rabbi Yonasan. But others say that it wasn't Rabbi Levi, it was Rabbi Yonasan. He says, Dovor zeh masoros b'yodeinu mian shekneses hagdolah. He says, you know, we have a tradition that was handed down to us from already the members of the Great Assembly. Remember, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, they were the ones who came back from the Babylonian exile, and they were the ones who reinstituted the importance of Torah and mitzvahs, which many people had forgotten during the time that Jews were in Babylonian exile. Okay, you have to forgive, I seem to be on the horse side today. Okay. What is this tradition, he says, that we have? He says, Kol Mokem Shenema, wherever we find in the Bible, Vayehi, Eino Ela Loshen Tsar, it always indicates a time of trouble. It's a language, literally, of trouble. Vayehi B'Bei Achashverosh, the days of Achashverosh, what do we find? Ava Haman, Haman appeared on the scene. Then we take a look, for example, at the very beginning of the book of Ruth, okay? Which begins with the words, Vayehi b'mei shvot ha-shotim, came to pass in the days when the judges were judging. So, what was bad at that time? Havarov, there was hunger, famine. Remember, it was because of the famine in the land in Beit Lechem Yehuda that we find that Elimelech and Nomi, they left together with their sons, Machlon and Kilion. They left in order to find a land of prosperity in the land of Moab, right?
Right.
Okay. All right, how about another example? Oh, yeah, we've got another example. It's written at the end of Parsha Bereishis, right at the very end. It says, Vayehi ki hechel ha'adom l'rov, right? Came to pass that mankind began to increase in numbers. Okay? Remember, this follows, you know, after they have the genealogy of Adam and his descendants and so on. And then it begins and says, and it came to pass when human beings began to increase in number. So, you would think that's wonderful, right? But what follows immediately over there, it says, Vayar Hashem, the Lord saw, ki rabba ra sa'adam, that the evil of mankind was very great. Of course, and that's the reason why, what happened, that follows, of course, in Parsha Noach. Okay. Then, as we continue in Parsha Noach, we find, again, Vayehi b'nasa mekedem, right? People moved from the east, okay? This is in connection with the generation of the Tower of Babel. And then what happened? So the people began to say,